Friends, welcome back. In this unit, we've been thinking about the story of creation and understanding more how Genesis 1 and 2 sets the trajectory for everything else that we see in Scripture, for understanding who we are as male and female, and understanding God's call on our lives. In this video, we're going to reflect and do a little bit of digging into thinking about a theology of the body. And in this section, I'm actually specifically building on the theology of the body of Pope John Paul II, who probably more than any contemporary theologian has really reflected on what it means to be embodied and what it means to understand ourselves as male and female, how we should think about marriage, how we should think about singleness. And so in this section, I really try to build on in what he does there to better understand who we are as God's people. And so a couple of questions I want to try to answer. The first is, what is the connection between the body and the person? And this gets a little bit, can get a little bit philosophical, but hang with me as we think about this. When I think about who I am as a person, that includes more than you can see. Who I am as a person involves my past. It involves my own experience, growing up within a certain family, within a certain context. It involves certain things that were great and that really built me up as a person. And it involves certain things that were difficult, struggles that I had to walk through or wounds that happened to me because of how people interact with me. So how do people know me? How do they come to encounter me? Well, it's actually through my body. My body is visible, makes who I am as a person visible to you. This is even though we are connecting through video online, part of the reason you can know me and know something about me is because I am bodily present where I am right now, speaking to you, articulating these things in this way. And so our bodies are really the place where we communicate, where we encounter each other, and our body makes our person visible. And so when I engage, when I encounter others, there's a sense that the body tells me something about who they are. It's the location or the site where I begin to interact with them and understand who they really are. Because again, when I encounter somebody, I can see their body, but it's as I engage with them as a person that I start to understand their emotions, their history, their past, all the things that make them who they are as a unique person. And so we have to recognize that there's this dimension of who we are that's visible, our bodies, and this dimension of who we are that is invisible, all the things that make us who we are as a person, but that those are things that we encounter in and through one another as we engage with each other physically. There's this close connection between the body and the person. The body makes the person visible. A second question here is, what is the spousal meaning of the body? This is actually a really strange phrase if you're not used to it. But this is a phrase that, again, Pope John Paul II uses. And part of what he means by this is that what you see in Genesis and in Ephesians 5 and in other places is that what we see in who we are as spouses is that we are called to give ourselves to our spouse. That part of what it means to be married to someone involves this total giving of ourself that includes the total giving of our bodies. That's in part why our sexuality, or when we think about sexual union, that's something that Scripture says is reserved for our spouse, because it's to our spouse that we give ourselves totally, including totally who we are physically in sexual union. And so when we think about the spousal meaning of the body, what you see there is that in marriage, we totally give ourselves to our spouse, and in doing that, we start to uncover who we really are. And so what you see here is that this actually works against the story of individualism. The story of individualism says, you define you, you figure out who you want to be and do those things. The spousal meaning of the body essentially says you find yourself truly when you learn to give yourself away totally and freely in love. And this is linked to our understanding of the body of Jesus. That what you see in Jesus is that he gives himself totally and completely to the church. To, as Ephesians 5 talks about, the church, his bride. And so as he gives himself totally to his bride, we understand then something about our call as spouses, that we totally give ourselves to one another. And so this is part of what we mean when we talk about the spousal meaning of the body, is that we begin to discover who we are. We begin to understand who we're meant to be when we learn to give ourselves away in that way, as spouses are called to do. And I've alluded to this a little bit already, but it's important to recognize what marriage symbolizes. In Ephesians 5, 21 through 33, Paul says that marriage between a husband and wife is actually meant to symbolize, is meant to point to Christ and the church. And so what we see in the way that God has ordained things to be is that in a loving marriage, in marriage that really gets what marriage is about, where two spouses care for each other, where they're faithful, where they give their lives to each other, where they love each other in concrete, everyday, practical ways, in a marriage like that, we actually start to get a glimpse of the reality of Christ's love for the church and the way that Jesus himself pours himself out for the church, the way that he seeks the good of the church before his own. You know, he says in the Gospel of John 15, that he lays down his life for his friends, for us. And that gives us a picture of what marriage is actually supposed to be. And so this is where we have to, I think, begin to cultivate the ability to see that marriage is not just about me. It's not just about finding a romantic connection. But what marriage is meant to do is actually put on display the gospel story of who Jesus is and help people see who God is in this deeper way. Now, when we think about the theology of the body and understanding some of these concepts, I want to just briefly highlight three different things that we see about human life in the beginning that helps us, again, dive deeper into this marriage relationship and understanding of who we are as human beings. So one of the things that you see in the beginning is that Adam has this awareness of solitude, that Adam has this awareness of being alone. As I read in a previous video, God says that he wants to provide a suitable helper, but that none of the animals fit that call. And so part of an emotion, glimpses of some of those dimensions from time to time in some animals, there is no animal like the human being. That part of what it means to be human is that we are created to love and created to be responsible for things and for all God's creation. And so to understand who we are as human beings, it says, here's who you are, here's what you're called to do and to be in my creation. And that we receive that call and that we are responsible, that we are able to respond to that in a way that goes beyond just animal instinct, but that we actually recognize who God is and we actually recognize who we are as his image bearers in this distinct way, and that we're called to love and respond appropriately to that. So Adam's solitude, the fact that there is no suitable helper in the animal kingdom, helps us understand a little bit about what it means to be human, to have this ability to love and to be responsible. You also see in the beginning this reality of communion of persons, that this is one of the key features of the relationship between Adam and Eve, husband and wife. And to understand this again, I want to unpack a little bit what I mean by person. Because Scripture says that body plus soul equals a living person. You see in Genesis 2:7 it says, God formed a man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being, a living person. A lot of times, people can just focus on one dimension, either body or soul. And this, in fact, is always going to warp our view of marriage, our view of bodies, our view of sexuality. There are some in our culture who would essentially erase the dimension of who we are as soul, as spiritual beings, and say we are nothing more than bodies. We are nothing more than matter. That's the view we talked about in terms of naturalism. That's a problem. It's going to end up with a warped view of who we are. But in different ways, sometimes Christians can try to erase the bodily dimension of who we are. As I mentioned a little bit in a previous session, there have been some throughout the history of Christianity that try to almost identify the body with evil and so block that out of the picture. But what you see in Genesis is that who we are as persons is this body-soul unity. That we're not two things, a body and a soul just smashed together, but that we have this integrity of being this body-soul unity, and that defines how we understand human beings. This is, I would say, okay, big words on here, hang with me. What do I mean by holistic anthropology? By holistic, I mean this connection. It's not just parts, body and soul, but it's a single whole. And it's a view of human beings that says we are this body-soul unity. I think that holistic anthropology leads to a holistic view of sexual union. In other words, what I mean is, if we tend to view ourselves like naturalism does, as just bodies, as matter in motion, we are going to tend to treat other people as just bodies to be used, rather than people to be honored and loved and respected and given dignity to when we think about sexual union. And so when Scripture talks about one flesh sexual union, this includes physical sexual union, I think, obviously, but sexual union points to the reality that two people are united here. This is not just the uniting of two bodies, but it's the uniting of two people and two people's lives. That's why, you know, we often maybe don't fully get this when we read Scripture. But if you pay attention, what you start to see is that Scripture views marriage, or Scripture views sexual union as a marital act. In other words, that to have sex with someone is to, in some ways, to commit yourself to be married to them. Now, that's a strange thing. I mean, I grew up in a context where, you know, people will talk about having sex outside of marriage, and again, I totally understand what people mean when they say something like that. But part of the way that Scripture talks about it is that if you have sex with somebody, that's a marital act. What's happening there is not just a physical union, but this uniting of two persons. Which is why in 1 Corinthians 6, Paul says, you cannot, as men in the Church of Corinth, you cannot go sleep with prostitutes, because the meaning of sex is it has this marital meaning. It unites two people. And so what we see then in the biblical vision is that the body and person cannot be separated. I can't look at somebody and not think about them as a person. I mentioned 1 Corinthians 6. This is where Paul says, again, you can't go sleep with prostitutes because sex has this meaning. We can think about this in other ways as well. You cannot just look at pornography where you're essentially just treating somebody as a body, somebody that you're going to say, I'm going to get pleasure from looking at this, but I'm not going to consider who they are as a person. Right? That's what's wrong here, is that we try to divorce the body and person, and Scripture says you can't do that. You have to treat people as persons. They have to be treated in this holistic way, with dignity, with love, with respect, and recognizing that there is this meaning to sexuality, meaning to sexual union, that what's happening here is not just something physical, but it's an actual communion of persons. So we have this understanding of Scripture that solitude reveals who we are as persons. Sexual union involves this communion of persons. And there's also this reality of nakedness, a theology of nakedness. Maybe you haven't thought about this before, but Genesis 2:25 is very clear here. Adam and his wife were naked and they felt no shame. Naked and they felt no shame. Part of what that shows us is that there's something about how we look at other people that is crucial. Adam and his wife could be naked and unashamed because at that point, sin had not yet entered the picture. Why is it that we cover ourselves after sin enters the picture? Well, it's partly, not just because there's some sense of shame, but it's because we're trying to protect ourselves from others who might look at us and exploit us. Others who might look at us and not see us as persons, not see us as image bearers, but see us as just an object. And so when we think about what Scripture teaches in Genesis 2 about nakedness, it's really important to see this link between nakedness and trust there, between Adam and his wife, between man and woman in the beginning. So part of what we have to ask ourselves is, how do we see others? That, again, we have to be really clear here, bodies are not sinful. Naked bodies are not sinful. What is sinful is a way of seeing other people that looks at them merely as objects for our own pleasure. So Wendell Berry, one of my favorite thinkers, says this in his book, Art of the Commonplace. In thinking about marriage and sex, he says, what must we do to earn the freedom of being unguardedly and innocently naked to someone? Our own and other cultures suggest that we must do a lot. We must make promises and keep them. We assume many fearful responsibilities and do much work. We must build the household of trust. See, here Barry's reflecting on this fact that for Christianity, there's a sense that nakedness, sexual union, belongs in the context of marriage, where we have made commitments to someone, where we have made promises, where we say, not just I want to be with you sexually, but I promise to care for you in every aspect of life. That's a big deal. And that the more that we actually just treat sex, the more that we treat bodies just flippantly as something to be used, something to be exploited or just enjoyed for my own pleasure and then cast aside, the more we undermine what God's intentions really are and how He's trying to show a little glimpse of who He is through our marriages and through our sexuality. And so part of what we have to distinguish here is, I think, proper sexual desire versus lust. A lot of people will use these terms as synonyms. They'll just use lust to mean the same thing as sexual desire. And I want to be really careful here because I think we'll unpack lust a little bit more in a future video. Lust is not just sexual desire. It's sexual desire that looks at another person as an object, that says, this all revolves around me. Whereas proper sexual desire is looking at my spouse and saying, I desire them sexually, and it's proper because I'm going to treat them as a person. I'm not going to treat them as an object to be used. And so this is really important, even when we think about struggling with things like pornography, which is such a huge struggle for many in our cultural context. What's going on here? It's not just something physical or sexual. It's I want to use that person as a means to an end, to gratify myself, to bring pleasure to myself. And so it's important to distinguish between these so that we can say, in the beginning, God's intention is that there is proper sexual desire. But that's not the same thing as lust. And that closely linked to this is, in Genesis, this notion of blessing your spouse. We see over and over God blesses creation and says it's very good. And that spouses themselves are called to enter into that blessing as God pronounces this blessing over them of who they are and who they're called to be. That's very different from trying to grasp or possess somebody, to control them, to use them again for my own ends. And so to understand what we're called to do, it's we have to be willing to see other people as people. And that is really that's really at the heart of this sexual ethic, that male and female, they're sexually different people in this one flesh union, are called to see each other as people before God. What this means then is that how God has made us is that when we love each other as husband and wife in this way, including sexual union, that new life comes because of that. And so there's this close connection in Scripture of recognizing that as man and woman, as husband and wife, love each other, new life comes from that. And so these are not little things. These are not minor things that we're talking about here. This is, do you understand the nature of love, and do we understand the nature of life? In Scripture, in Genesis 1 and 2, these things are tied together. That just as God's love creates and gives life to humanity, so our love for one another is meant to bring forth new life. So as we enter into and as we think about the story of creation, we're aware of the fact that our bodies point us to this deeper reality that we aren't just bodies, we're persons. We're persons who are called to love, to be responsible. We are persons who are called in marriage to commune with our spouses. And we are called to recognize that the nakedness that happens in marriage and in sexual union is to point to this deep sense of belonging to each other and truly caring, blessing one another, not just trying to grasp or possess or lust after. And as we do that, as we enter into this way of life that is blessing, that is giving, that is serving, our marriages more and more become a picture of the gospel story of Jesus and help us and help those around us see who God really is. So in this unit, we've thought about the story of creation and what that means. In the next unit, we're going to look at sin and think a little bit more deeply about how sin affects and corrupts how we think about ourselves, how we operate in terms of our bodies, our sexuality, marriage, and singleness. And so until next time, blessings.